This is where they are building the largest nuclear fusion reactor in the world.
Yeah, a friend of mine told me I had to check out this pool.
America on Main Street and at the dinner table is talking about infrastructure when 20 years ago, they didn't even know what that meant.
Today, those towers are an astounding display of wealth, prestige, and engineering firsts.
It's impacting everyday Americans.
I am against the train. The way it's being done right now.
New York City housing is a scam. It is a scam.
The Shard in central London is being officially opened today, and at 310 metres tall, it's Europe's newest and tallest skyscraper.
Hello, I'm Fred Mills.
And this is the world's best construction podcast
by the B1M.
Hello and welcome to your latest episode of the world's best construction podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by James Hardy. I'm your host, Fred, and as always, I'm joined by Luke in Essex and Liam down in Sydney, Australia. And guys, it is a very big week because we finally made it to the Faroe Islands and released the video. It came out this week. Good times, right? This is a big deal.
This is huge, mate. Huge. I mean, you've been talking about this for weeks and weeks and weeks, so I'm glad the day is finally here.
Yeah, it's behind us now. Yeah. I can shut up about it. A lot of work went into this. Very pleased to see it out there. So yeah, it's going to be a good episode today. We've got lots to talk about, lots of juicy things. Are you ready for this, Luke?
Yeah, I can't wait, mate. I can't wait. And I'm looking forward to a little bit of also in the news, you know. New York and Hollywood. I'm looking forward to chatting that. And I just want to say, if you hear stuff in the background while I'm talking, I still got Tony, the floor guy, downstairs doing my floor. All right,
there you go.
So I'm just, there's nothing I can do. I've soundproofed as much as possible. So sorry.
Construction,
yeah.
Eh?
Yeah, unbelievable. Exactly. Yeah,
unbelievable. Yeah. What about you, Liam? What's happening down in Sydney, Australia, mate? Is it all Barbies and beach and kangaroos everywhere?
It's still hot. Put it that way. It was 30 degrees here, which is great. It's like never ending summer. I tell you what though, I'm going to Thailand this weekend. You guys familiar with Thailand? I don't know if you might pronounce it Thailand or something like that.
you mean the country, Liam? Oh yeah, yeah. I'm familiar with Thailand. Yeah, tell me more.
Good. Yeah, mate. Yeah, just popping over there for a couple of weeks. You know, chill out, chill on the beach.
I always
visit some fam.
Yeah, you got family that live there, don't you? Or...
Yeah, my brother and his family lives in Koh Samui.
Is the food good there as well? Like the Thai food? I love Thai food.
Yeah, of course, mate.
Yeah, well jealous of that. Well jealous of that.
What's been happening in the UK? What's going on in rainy Surrey, Fred?
It's not been that rain lately, mate. Actually, it's been all right. We've got sunshine today. It's nice. I've been busy, mate. Busy making the content, you know. Building a massive YouTube channel is my job. So, yeah, it's been good. hitting some PBs at the gym as well, which has been good fun.
Ooh.
Yeah. It's all going along at the minute, which is good. Guys, we've got a very good episode coming up for you today. We are talking about the world's first undersea roundabout constructed in the Faroe Islands. Also in the news, we are talking about revised plans for New York's Affirmation Tower, a very big story that's been breaking this week. Also, Hollywood's $1 billion new Star Tower. Whole episode, as ever, is going to be sprinkled with some of your messages and comments from the week. Let's do it. Let's dive in. Let's get this one cooking up. Let's go. First this week, we are talking about the world's first undersea roundabout. This is an epic video that came out on the B1M yesterday. Our latest long-form special, 30 minutes long, of me taking this epic journey across the Faroe Islands, me and the team. Awesome. I loved making this story. I love visiting this place. I love finally getting there. Incredible feat of engineering. I'm excited to talk about this today. It's just, where else would you see an undersea roundabout, right? It's like engineering at the extreme. So, yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible when you actually think about a roundabout underwater. And then I think when we go on to the depths of it as well, nice. I think it's more fascinating, mate, to be honest.
Nice pun there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, we all got it.
Because this has been in the works for ages, isn't it? But you had to cancel because of crazy weather, right?
Oh, yeah, mate. Yeah, so actually, our previous video on the Faroe Islands, I was supposed to be there in 2022. We tried to get there in 2022. Only got as far as Copenhagen Airport. Many of my listeners will probably remember this. I had to fly back again because the connecting flight from Copenhagen in Denmark up to the Faroe Islands, which is an autonomous self-governing territory of Denmark, was cancelled because of the weather. So that was really annoying. But we made a video out of it anyway, and it's still got like 1.7 million views, just casually throwing that in there. You know, that's how we roll.
Wouldn't it be funny if this got less?
It would be. We've had that conversation. We've had that conversation. I've been like, guys, you know, all this time and effort and money.
I'm joking.
If it gets less, you can forget future foreign trips, lads. We'll just sit and make them at home. Yeah, very pleased to see this one out there. It is, I'd have to say, like, construction's amazing. And then when you go and see projects like this that really push the boundaries in the most remote corners of the world and connect these far-flung communities through amazing projects like this, it's just... So I'm not really talking very eloquently here. I'm so excited. It's just amazing. It's an amazing project in an amazing country, in an amazing location, the kind of place that is a privilege to go and see. And to me, it just speaks to the best of this industry. The fact we can do stuff like this in locations like this, facing the adversity these guys faced, is just, it's remarkable.
I can't lie. It did make me think, oh, do you know what? This does look great. The Faroe Islands, they do look visitable, you know, and this makes it easier, right, to get from A to B in the islands. So I'm not just going to be on like choppy boats between islands. So it was impressive, mate. Really impressive.
It was awesome. It's not like anywhere I've been before, because I've been to Iceland, which is again like one of these places that's very unlike anywhere else in the world. It's very remote and very cold, but there is a more established tourism industry there. Whereas with the Faroe Islands, they're still kind of like finding their way in tourism. I'm sure they wouldn't mind me saying that, but you know, there isn't as much to do. There aren't as many excursions. There's not as many sort of big tourist pools. It is really a lot more cut off. And you probably saw on my social media as part of the filming trip, we went across to some of the more remote islands that you could only reach by boat and ferry. And there was literally like a handful of people living on these places. And you know, if the weather chops up, those ferries and boats just don't run and you can't get anywhere.
What are those people doing on those tiny islands? Are they just like sheep farmers?
Yeah, so there's farming, fishing. A lot of them commute over to the capital, Tórshavn, which is where you have to get a ferry to get there. And if you can't get there, then you're stuffed, basically. But we travelled across the whole island, as you see in the video, the whole region of islands, as you see in the video. We went right down to the very southernmost island, Sandoy. And from there, you could see beyond that, another island that was only reachable by ferry. I think there are two people living on it.
No.
Yeah. Wow. And they like have, a couple. They have a, no, no I think, I th- I'm not sure they are a couple. I think there's a one guy who's a farmer living in his own and there's someone else, but they can only be, they have to get a ferry across or a helicopter. But if the weather's really bad, there's no ferry, no helicopter. They have like an air ambulance for this hospital that sits in the center of the capital. But, you know, if the weather's really bad and you've fallen down the stairs and broken your leg, there's no help coming anytime soon. You've got to wait for the weather to pass. It is a different league of remote. I have to say, some days in the busy, congested corner of London that we find ourselves in, it is quite appealing.
But can you get late night ramen on the Faroe Islands? Or
don't know, mate. There was a Burger King there.
No, there weren't.
Is there a pub there, mate?
There are pubs there. Yeah, there isn't actually an Irish bar.
I mean, every city on planet Earth has an Irish bar.
There's one on the moon, isn't there? Yeah. But anyway, guys, if those of you don't know where the Faroe Islands is, right, you've got to imagine a map in your head and basically nestled between Iceland, the northern coast of Scotland and the western coast of Norway, that's where the Faroe Islands are sitting, way up in the North Atlantic. As I said, it's a self-governing territory of Denmark. Population is just under 55,000 people and 70,000 sheep. So there are more sheep here than people. And I have to say, when we were there, there's a lot of sheep everywhere you go. Lots of sheep. Now, to put this into context, Wembley Stadium in London has a 90,000 seat capacity. So the entire population of the Faroe Islands could sit inside Wembley Stadium with plenty of room for, I don't know, the opposition team. Who would it be? Iceland, yeah, to come in.
Or some sheep.
Or some sheep, yeah. Don't bring your sheep with you. You haven't got enough room.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a Welsh joke in there somewhere, but I'm going to pass.
That's inappropriate, instance. Luke, actually. I think you're offending our Welsh listeners.
But yeah, I love them, Wales.
I'm deeply offended.
I love Wales, and I love Welcome to Wrexham. Great, great show. So,
well, Essex and Wales have this like special connection, don't they, after Gavin and Stacey?
That's true, mate. Yeah, that is true. Love a bit of Gavin and Stacey. Good shout.
Mm. They're like national treasures for you guys, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty much. Put us on the map, mate.
Americans listening are like, what are they talking about? What's Gavin and Stacey?
Yeah, Google it.
Yeah, go on YouTube.
No, I'm thinking that right now.
Gavin and Stacey made James Corden who he is.
Mm.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it did. But he was a lot better in Gavin and Stacey than what he went on to.
Yeah. He's become all polished and thin and all Hollywoody now.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Making great musicals like Cats.
Yeah. Oh.
God, that was a bad film. Anyway, back over to the Faroe Islands. These islands are looking to diversify out from fishing to bring more tourism in and to better connect their population and boost their economy. Now, there are 11 single-lane road tunnels in the Faroes to help people get about. These are on-land road tunnels going through, literally right through the middle of mountains, cliffs, huge rock formations. A single-lane road tunnel is terrifying, especially when you're going through solid rock. I drove through one. It was unreal. With this massive lorry in front of me, massive lorry behind me, there was like no room, no space. It was pretty claustrophobic. But anyway, for a long time they've been drill and blasting these tunnels out to improve their road network. But historically, the only way to get between the islands, as I said, was by ferry. And if the weather was bad, as we've talked about, those boats just wouldn't run and you'd be stuck. They're now going a lot bigger with their tunneling systems and building these undersea tunnels. And they've been doing that for a few years. So the first one between the main island, Stremoy, and the airport island opened back in 2002. And then they've just recently built the Estroy Tunnel, which is more than 11 kilometres long. That opened back in 2020. Cut the journey time between Tórshavn and Runavík, which is this little village on the Estroy Island, from over an hour to just under 16 minutes. Like, it's a ridiculous cut in commute times. And that's the one with the world's first undersea roundabout. So you're driving through the Estroy Tunnel, and then the Estroy Tunnel splits in two and goes off to two different parts of the same island. And in doing that, they've carved out this huge column and built the world's first undersea roundabout. Now, it's dubbed the Jellyfish Roundabout. Are you guys getting jellyfish vibes?
Yep, I am. I think it does look like a jellyfish.
Yeah, I thought it looked like a bit like a roundabout. Yeah, I suppose roundabouts do look a bit like jellyfish.
Liam knows his jellyfish as well. He's been Portuguese. You get a Portuguese man of war where you are?
I don't think it's the Portuguese. I think it's man of war, but I don't think it's the Portuguese one that kills you.
No. Why would it be the Portuguese one, Fred, in Sydney? Why am I saying that?
Mate, it could be. You know, I'm not up to date with my jellyfish species on the east coast of Australia. I can check
if you
that,
study man. Jellyfish, if you study jellyfish and you're listening, is the Portuguese man of war unique to Portugal, or is it called that and it lives worldwide? These are the kind of huge questions people want unpacked on the world's best construction podcasts.
Yeah, big time. Big time. Yeah.
Anyway, Jellyfish Roundabout is sitting down there. It's an incredible feat of engineering, more than 70 meters down below the fjord. I'm there. I'm walking around it. We talk about the art project that's been built around it. This sort of group of Faroese dancers silhouetted around it, doing this traditional Faroese dance. It's awesome. We actually went to go there. Sorry, go on, Liam. You've got a jellyfish update for us.
No, I was just going to say the figures of like people dancing around. Is that a bit creepy? It's a bit weird. It's a bit weird looking at it. I don't know, as you're driving through a dark tunnel, you've just got these dark figures, like silhouettes of human beings, like you know, like models kind of thing. And I'm like, oh, that's a bit weird. What's that? Driving up to it, like, what the hell is that?
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I get that it's creepy. Like the community, they've built that, they're all there together and it's celebration and dance. But there is a little bit, like if I'm looking there, I'm thinking, God, is that just like a group of lads, like just hanging out,
there's
hanging
a mob
out
around?
the Faroe Islands ultras are there waiting for us, waiting for the football game.
I kind of wondered if it might look better without the figures around it, but I didn't want to say that because it's obviously this amazing artwork they've commissioned. There's also a radio station, so you can, as you're driving through the tunnel, you can tune into the radio station that plays, which is supposed to be like this recreation of the construction sounds. Now, I'll tell you what, we we talk about the drill and blast method, which I'll explain to you guys in a minute, but that involves dynamite, drilling machines, diesel driven trucks, you know, all this sort of stuff. And the music they had on was like this sort of operatic, you know, nice chilled music with sort of this weird drumming sound in the background. And apparently the guy I interviewed, Titer, was saying to me that, yeah, that's supposed to be reminiscent of the construction works, but I doubt it was like that.
It was 100 FM, wasn't it? The radio. Yeah, I saw that in the video and I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's like Kiss.
It is in the UK. In the
Kiss
UK, 100. That's Kiss FM. Quite different, I would say. Just heads up. If you're tuning in to 100 FM in the Faroes, expecting a bit of Dua Lipa or whatever it is. You're not going to get that down in the Faroe Islands.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, great feat of engineering. They've also built the Sandoy Tunnel, which is 10.8 kilometres long. That is the longest single tunnel run. That opened, that's brand new, right? Opened in December 2023. That connects Stremoy, which is the main island with the capital on it, down to Sandoy Island, where only 1,500 people live. Now, that tunnel, you see it in the video, it's absolutely dead. There's no one driving through it. It's very, very quiet. And you're just driving through this incredible feat of engineering that's been blasted out through solid rock for kilometer after kilometer after kilometer. And then you come out on this incredibly remote community. But that now means, I think, something like 90% of the Faroese population are now connected by road because of that tunnel. So,
right.
It's amazing the extent to which they've gone to build these tunnels, connect their islands, connect their communities, when it isn't a very big place. There's a lot of foresight going into what could happen if they built their economy and drove more tourism.
Yeah, so with that, mate, when you were there, is there adequate hotels, accommodations, motels, Airbnbs and things like that?
Yeah, so I think in the capital of Tórshavn, there are quite a few hotels. We stayed in a really nice hotel, which seemed to be the one that was like the hotel of the Faroe Islands. And it was very nice. They actually had this like a wall in the lobby of famous people that had stayed there. And let's just say that was an eclectic mix. So you had President Bill Clinton, Vice President Al Gore. You had the Queen of Denmark. You had Prince Philip, I think, had been there. And then you had Mel C and Brian McFadden from Westlife. And you know what it was like? There's just a very big, spectrum here. So yeah, quite a range of people. I actually took a picture of him. I have to post the full list. There was like Max Verstappen had been there.
Post the full list. Oh, that's interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. Interesting. It's the collective mix of people that stayed in my hotel. Anyway, yeah, there is a hotel, mate. Big one in the capital.
that's quite a mix of people, mate, on an island in the middle of nowhere, isn't it?
It is. I'm sure they're etching the Fred Mills sign up on the wall right now. Fredu. Now, these tunnels, as I said, are a huge feat of engineering. They've drilled and blasted these. So we asked them, you know, what's with the tunneling construction method? Why not use a TBM? Why not use a different tunneling technique? You know, the immersed tube method, that kind of thing we've talked about. And basically, because the Faroe Islands were going so big on this project, they were borrowing a lot of money to build it and then paying that money back over time, which again, which I'll explain in a bit. They were saying that it's kind of too risky for them to do something they didn't know about. So because they've done drill and blast for decades on the islands, that's what they knew. That's the expertise they had. So they brought in NCC, who are a Norwegian infrastructure firm, construction firm, very good at tunneling, as you might imagine. We've talked about them before. They've covered a number of other projects. They've worked on a number of other projects that we've covered on this podcast. But they came in and basically they're basically blasting their way through solid rock under the ocean for 11 kilometers. It is insane. They drill these holes, they put dynamite in the holes, stand back, blow the rock apart, and then clear the rock out of the way, spray the walls so the concrete kind of holds the rock in place. They don't do that the whole way along. A lot of it is exposed rock, but in some places they need to spray the walls. And they just repeat that step over and over and over again, that process over and over again for 11 kilometers under the water. And I have to say that when you drive through it, you can see like the rocky, craggy shape of the tunnel around you. But because they've got so much skill around this drill and blast method, they know where to put the dynamite. They know what shape they want to create. It is pretty unique and pretty consistently shaped, the tunnel. Like it's amazing how they've done it. And you think like, that's not a simple way to build something. You know, you're down there, it's dark, the rock is solid. It just blows my mind.
There is a clip in the video of the guys kind of putting dynamite down the tunnel and then coming up. Did you guys film that, or is that like footage that we borrowed from somewhere?
Yeah, so that's footage that they gave us, because we didn't actually, obviously I was there driving through the tunnels, the finished tunnels. So we got some footage of,
building it. Okay.
But I did get the drill and blast experience. If those of you remember from staying in the hotel, this wonderful hotel, well, these fantastic people stayed, Liam. You remember they were blasting the pool apart? So like, I said this a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
We sat in our hotel room, and a dynamite blast went off. It was, fun times. what's also interesting is that they have these pump rooms they've built along the route to pump out the seawater. So we went into one that was 190 meters below ground. That is the deepest point in the Faroe Islands. Bear in mind, qualification for a skyscraper is 150 meters. So we are way down here, underneath the water, underneath the fjord. And they've got these huge rooms that are like pumping out seawater that's constantly leaking into the tunnels to make sure they stay dry and operating. It's, huge.
Is that, now, mate, is that normal?
Yes. Mm. It is normal. Yes. But it's quite unique. Yeah. It is normal. It's different when you're building a undersea tunnel in this type of rock using the drill and blast method in this location. So
right,
that's
190 meters down.
Yeah, that's why it's needed here. But there are other tunnels around the world that have a similar thing to pump seawater out, because you do have this. Well, you can see in the video, there's water creeping into the tunnel, and I actually taste. He goes, "Oh, you can taste Atlantic Ocean here," and sure enough, it tasted like salt water coming through rock.
So it's not like we don't have one of those bad boys like under Dartford. You know, that's not needed.
Right. No, that's a different type of tunnel. And what's interesting is that pump room I went to was the deepest pump room. That's in the middle of the tunnel, which is the deepest point. But then they, rather than having these huge machines that pump all the water the whole way back up, they pump it up to interim pump stations up the tunnel. So there are like a row of these across the tunnel network. It gets pumped up to each level and then pumped out again after that. It's one of those things, again, like there's just these closed doors as you drive through a tunnel. You wouldn't think about that, but it's one of these things that keeps a piece of infrastructure like that moving. You know, it's clever stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really impressive, mate, and a little bit scary, but necessary, obviously.
Where this gets particularly interesting is when you guys listening to this will know all about infrastructure projects in the USA, the UK, Europe, how much they cost. We're going to talk about a tower later on in this episode that's costing $1 billion in Los Angeles. Very, very expensive. These tunnels are pretty cheap. So the Estroy Tunnel was $200 million. The Sandoy Tunnel was $200 million. Not a lot of money to build a tunnel like that, especially when we're spending, 2.8 billion building the Silvertown Tunnel under the Thames to connect one side of the river to the other.
Yeah, that's wild.
absurdity.
I thought while watching this video, I actually thought, oh, that seems quite cheap. That's actually what that was the impression I had. But it's all relative, isn't it? And I think that's the point you're going to make, right?
Yeah, and like he told me how cheap it was as we were driving through it. And I'm like, oh, great, we're deep under the ocean, under solid rock, and you built this on the cheap. Good to know, mate. but not to suggest the standards weren't right. Those allegations are unfounded, I should say. Now, the cost per person of these tunnels on the islands, because there's only, as I said, less than 55,000 people on the islands, so it cost over $7,000 per person on the islands. Now, to put that in context for you, the US infrastructure bill was about $1,000 per American citizen in most states.
Blimey. That is a lot of money. But again, let's think of how relative it is. Are wages higher in the Faroe Islands than in the US? I'd imagine they are.
I don't actually know if wages are higher in the Faroe Islands, Luke. I know in Denmark, certainly they are, but I'm not sure if that's the same in the Faroe Islands. Faroe Islands are kind of similar price to Denmark, I'd say, when we were there, like, you know, buying stuff.
Right.
The big question is, where does a small island like this find the money for something like this? And this for me is really interesting. I think it's something that a lot of other places could learn from. So basically, the funding is partly from the Faroese government. I have to say, it's more of a minority came from the Faroese government. And then partly from UK and mostly US pension funds. So these pension funds invest money in constructing these infrastructure projects. And then they recoup that money over time through the tolls. Tolls are expected to be fully repaid by 2040. But because the tunnels are being used more than they expected, they now reckon that that could be sooner. And what's happened with previous tunnels, again, similar sort of scenario where they built these tunnels and then recovered the cost through tolls. Once the cost is recovered, the toll price suddenly goes down. It goes down through the floor. Toll price, when we were there, was pretty expensive. There was, you know, they were charging a lot of money. But it's kind of like using the subway in New York or using the tube in London. Once you hit a maximum number of visits a month, then you don't pay anymore. There's a fixed rate that you just then pay. It's amazing how you've got this. Again, they're an island nation. They're good at tunneling. There's a clear business model. They've convinced US pension funds to invest in it, and obviously the US and UK pension funds in time are going to make more money back overall than they put in, because there'll be an interest rate on it, etc. There'll be they'll generate more money from the tolls ultimately than what they invested. But for pension fund companies, it's a very, pardon the pun, a very solid investment. There's a clear business model, clear plan. There's very little risk. And it's a good way of financing your infrastructure. And I think, you know, a lot of other places around the world could probably learn from this. I know that in other places we're talking about billions rather than hundreds of millions. But, you know, for getting the big projects we talk about, going for the smaller stuff that would make a big difference in, you know, countless US cities, countless UK towns, this could be a good move, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. I like that you've just said a lot of places could learn from this, because it's for sure investing in a project that a lot of the citizens of these islands will definitely benefit from. You know, the infrastructure in the US, of course, a lot of people are going to benefit from that, goes without saying. But here, You're actually seeing a benefit in everyday life, aren't you? The citizens of the Faroes will see the benefit of being able to drive to the hospital, being able to commute to work, which is kind of, that was the human point of the video that I really appreciated. You know, we're seeing the benefit of people from day one of this stuff opening. Yeah. And in other infrastructure projects across the globe, you don't always see that, do you? Or experience that. Loved it, mate.
Yeah, and it's amazing the difference I think it makes for tourists as well, because hiking's pretty big in the Faroe Islands. Like, the best way to see some of the stuff we put in the video, some of these amazing shots, is to get out of your car and go on a bit of a hike. I say that like it's like some sort of amateur going for a walk. It's a bit more than that. You know, you need to have proper hiking gear. You need to be a professional. But you can now do that. You know, before, like, just getting to the islands is a bit of a pain sometimes because of where it is, because of the weather, because of the short runway and stuff. But now, you know, if you get over that hurdle, you can get between the islands more easily. You're not going to be completely restricted by ferries and stuff, you know, you've got the ability now, whatever the weather's doing, to go from island to island. And that's huge, people living there, but also for their economy, because it's a more appealing place to go now, I think, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, doing something like the world's first undersea roundabout definitely puts you on the map.
A lot of photographers go to the Faroe Islands now. Like, it's really starting to become a travel destination, I think, for wildlife and for scenic photography. It looked incredible, mate. I can't lie. Some of the B-roll in this video was sensational.
Yeah,
it was absolutely brilliant.
It doesn't, almost like the stuff you see on screen doesn't do it justice, because it was so incredible when you were there. Just trying to capture it was tough. But yeah. The other aspect of the Faroe Islands I want to talk about quickly is their renewable power goals. So they're doing a lot of stuff in renewable power, because basically the Faroe Islands has got lots of wind, it's got lots of tidal power, it's got lots of open space. It's basically the ideal place for generating renewable power. One of the most interesting things they're doing, again, we show this in the video, is building the world's first utility scale tidal dragon, which my son was very excited about. But when I told him, it's kind of not as excited as it sounds, he was a bit disappointed. But basically, this is where they put these mini power plants called kites. They carry them out to sea, tie them to a foundation on the seabed, and then the flow of the tide and an onboard control system cause that kite to move through the water, underwater, in a figure of eight formation. And that movement turns a turbine on the kite that generates power. That power then goes down through an undersea cable back to a control station on land that's connected to the grid and generates clean, renewable power. These kites look like they're sort of bright yellow, and they look like little spaceships, little drones, really. And they've got, hundreds of them tied up under the ocean, generating clean, renewable power for the Faroe Islands. It's a great idea. The first place in the world I've ever done this at this scale. Just epic stuff.
I couldn't believe what I was seeing when when this came on the video. Little kites just going around in an eight, you know, in the... It makes so much sense. It's one of those things that... I think Liam the other day said, once he used an iPhone, he was like, oh, it just made sense. And he said, oh, once you drove a Tesla, it just made sense. I felt the same feeling watching this. I was like, yeah, why don't we do stuff like this? And it'd be brilliant if this sort of technology could be really experimented on and reported on here, and then maybe elsewhere we can start using it as a way of getting renewable energy. It was genius, mate. Send a little drone kite into the sea, get energy from it. No brainer.
Yeah. And it just looks cool as well. Like, it's very exciting and engaging story to tell, because it's clean energy. It's a great engineering, you know, feat on its own. And yeah, and it is getting some international coverage now, which is good. I think there's a lot of interest in that utility scale development. So yeah, I was really pleased we covered that. And it's a really good thing to get in there, because so much of their energy, in fact, they're trying to get all their energy generated from renewable power, which, you know, for obviously they're a small country. They've got a lot, you know, leaning in their favor. But to do that sets a great example. Those pump rooms I told you about, you know, the lighting in the undersea tunnels, all that's generated by renewable power. It's awesome stuff.
Wow. That's wild. Yeah. That is wild. Yeah, this was crazy impressive, mate. Would you recommend it as a destination for people to visit?
I would. I think you just need to be prepared for it to be a very quiet, remote, cold, and cut-off place. Like, it's incredible, but it is the most remote place I've ever been. And I've done stuff in like northern Finland. I've done stuff in Iceland, you know, up into Sydney, which is pretty remote. So I just say it is good. It's an amazing place to see, but just be prepared for it to be very, like, it's a huge divorce from the world we know, I would say. And people listening in the Faroe Islands will be offended by that, because they're like, why are you making us out to be this small, like, isolated community? Yeah, they have got a lot of things that we've got there. And particularly in Tórshavn, it's like a normal European city. It is a great place. But what you can't get away from is the fact that compared to the rest of Europe, it is notably more isolated.
Right.
Isn't that the appeal of it, though?
It is for me.
Like, people going there. Yeah, I think that'd be amazing going there. Just how isolated it is, how picturesque it is, and how clean it is, like you were saying earlier. Just like the air that you're breathing, I think you mentioned in the video that you could just tastes fresher, right?
Yeah. But what I guess I'm saying is it's more than a weekend city break somewhere else to get a change of scenery. This feels like a real departure. And you know, people that live there, there's like a 2-hour flight down to Copenhagen. You can go to Iceland pretty quickly. You can get to the US. There's now, they do flights to the US from there as well. But you know, when the weather's all right, if the weather's not good and your plane can't fly, you're trapped where you are. So it is, yeah, it's just a very big step from the world most of us know, I would say.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, let us know what you think about this. The world's first undersea roundabout is an epic video that came out of the B1M yesterday, 30 minutes long. Please do watch it over the Easter weekend. We'd love to know what you think. Get your comments coming in, podcast@theb1m.com. So today's episode is sponsored by James Hardy. James Hardy recently featured on a modular construction project in Poole in Dorset in the UK. Now, the planning approval was originally for render, but due to time and budget restrictions, a similar look was needed. James Hardy was able to offer an affordable A2 fire-rated solution with the Hardy architectural panel in smooth sand. A blend of 3 colours was chosen from the core range, which included Arctic White, Anthracite Grey, and Cobblestone to give the coastal location a modern and contemporary look. And I have to say, this project does look very, very good. Their products are specifically formulated to give you a long-lasting, low-maintenance and consistent finish for years to come, and all James Hardy facade products are backed by an industry-leading 15-year warranty. Guys, go and check out James Hardy and the Hardy architectural panels down there at the link in the podcast description. As I say, we love these guys. Great sponsors, great people. Guys, go and check it out. James Hardy, link in the podcast description, and a massive thanks to James Hardy for sponsoring today's episode. Also in the news this week, going from one of the quietest and most remote places in the world, the Faroe Islands, to one of the busiest places in the world, Manhattan Island in New York, revised plans have been unveiled for the super tall Affirmation Tower. This has been unveiled by the Peebles Corporation, which is the developer behind the project. It's designed by OMA, it rises from a site close to Hudson Yards, and I think perhaps most interestingly slash controversially, this design replaces the previous one that was put forward by Ajay Associates. What do you guys make of the new and improved Affirmation Tower?
Oh, I like it. I like anything that's different. What I've realized about, you know, giving my worthless opinion on skyscrapers each week is that I actually really enjoy unique skyscrapers that bring a different kind of style to the skyline. And I think this does exactly that.
Yeah,
I don't really know how to describe that middle part, but it's very interesting. It's very it's very eye-catching.
Yeah. No one's opinion is irrelevant, mate, I have to say. And this is the thing. Like, everyone is entitled to an opinion on the built environment. Doesn't matter if you're a highbrow architect that studied it all your life or someone who just has an interest in what a building looks like and thinks that looks nice, that doesn't look nice. You're interested in what your local town, city looks like. Everyone matters. It's relevant. And like, your view on it, saying that you like stuff that looks different, matters, counts.
Yeah. It's for people, isn't it? Architecture. And sometimes I think some firms, dare I say, lose sight of that. And yeah, as an enthusiast, I notice that sometimes. I think this is a sweet upgrade on what was there before. But what was there before was, or what was being proposed before, sorry, was a diabolical, I think. Like really, really rubbish. Really rubbish. And
there was a lot of interest in that first Affirmation Tower. I have to say, I think
was there.
It's one of the strongest reactions I've ever seen to a skyscraper being announced. Not the strongest, but one of the strongest reactions I've ever seen to a skyscraper being announced.
In a positive way or like mixed?
In every way, really, just because it was so different. It was so different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know, mate. I don't know. I think this is this also looks and feels more New York-y to me as well.
It does. It does.
Yeah,
It's designed by OMA, but there is a Foster and Partners vibe, I have to say, going on, especially with that middle section, the way some of the trusses are arranged.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. It's eye-catching. it is different. It is a lot safer. It's much more New York.
You say this would be safe? You think this is a safe design? That middle bit, mate.
It is interesting. It is interesting. It's safer than the previous one.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Some other interesting parts in this. You might be wondering why it's called the Affirmation Tower. Basically, it's on course to become the world's tallest building owned by majority black-owned companies and the tallest building ever built by a woman-led contractor. Now, in a statement that came with this, the People's Corporation explained how the project's going to align with their ethos of affirmative development. Over 30% of all construction contracts are going to be awarded to minority and female contractors. And that's a move that the developer says really underscores their tangible dedication to fostering equitable opportunities within what they see as a transformational project. So that part has, as you might imagine, sadly on the internet, generated quite a bit of debate. Lots of people saying, is it relevant? I'd say it is relevant, but it's an interesting part of this development and this development firm and the ethos behind it.
Mm.
A few comments on this. We've got Sam saying it's a good improvement, but looks like a squashed drinking straw. Definitely. Also, why does the lady in the second render have a massive telescope? Good question, Sam. We don't know. There's also a lot of questions over that render. There's people with funny shaped hands holding things they aren't holding. And anyway, it's almost like it's design render, not the real thing. But anyway, Matthew Shirker again saying this redesign needs more renderings from different angles to really capture it. But I can't help think how much more I liked the Adjei Associates design for the tower. There you go. Bit of balance. I agree. I should say we've got one render of this at the minute from one angle looking up towards Central Park and Blenheim Row. Doesn't really reveal how close it is to Hudson Yards and all the stuff that's going on there now. But yeah. That's kind of the story of the comments, really. Some people are saying, love it, love the change. Others saying, not so sure. We've done some very black and white hard polls on this, and the revised design has been winning those polls by a massive margin. 80% of the votes.
The lady looks like she's holding a noob tube.
What? Noob tube?
A noob tube.
What's a noob tube?
Oh, boys. A noob tube is like a bazooka. So in video games, if you're going around just with a bazooka, it's called a noob tube because only noobs go around with bazookas.
That turned out better than I hoped it would, which is good. So yeah. I was slightly worried where we were going with this conversation then. But
a noob tube. It's
just a bazooka on a video game.
Yeah, noob tube. Yeah.
Like YouTube. Yeah. But noob tube,
yeah. Mm. There you go. Bit of information for everyone. They'll love that.
You learn something new. I tell you, the stuff you learn on this podcast, Dave, enlightening. Now, swinging over to the west coast of the US of A, we are going to Hollywood, where the place is set to get a new star, quite literally. Foster and Partners have unveiled plans for the Star, which is a spiraling, tree-wrapped new office tower that is set to become the home of an as yet undisclosed global entertainment company. Who could this be? Think Disney, Netflix, Universal Studios, something like that. $1 billion they are spending on this. It's going to be naturally ventilated with a special focus on occupant well-being, partly achieved through what the practice highlights as landscaped social garden terraces, which I imagine is a balcony with some plants. All of those wrap around the tower. There's going to be a podium garden. There's going to be a rooftop terrace. All the kind of things you can have in LA because it's nice and warm and sunny. 360-degree views of downtown LA available out of the windows. Now, again, they've made that sound nice, but views of downtown LA aren't that nice. The famous Hollywood sign and the Pacific Ocean way off in the distance will also be within your sights. What do you guys think of this one? Now, the main reaction, I have to say, has been how the heck are you spending $1 billion on this? It feels very overpriced, right?
Yeah, definitely, mate. It looks beautiful, though. I think it looks amazing.
Yeah, it's clearly a nod to the Capitol building. Capitol Records, is it?
Yeah.
That's also in LA. Reminds me of that. It doesn't look like a billion-dollar building, but I'm actually a fan of this. It does look like LA. Oh, I've got the builder. Got Tony. Go. Go on, can you hear that? Oh, mate.
Yeah, that's spiraling. It's not an atrium because obviously it's outdoors, but that spiraling twist around the building is actually a bit reminiscent of Foster and Partners Gherkin in London, which is 20 years old in April. So, yeah, I the billion-dollar thing, I have to say, again, it looks nice. I like it. But even if you are fitting it out with state-of-the-art recording studios and underground goodness knows what television production studios, $1 billion for that. I mean, what is LA's gone mad? California building costs have gone through the roof.
Yeah, it doesn't add up. I don't get it. And I don't think the shrubbery will look that good.
Yeah, of course it won't look that good.
Looks great in the render. It's going to look rubbish in real life, mate. It's going to be underwhelming, which is a shame because I like the render. It's a really cool shape. It's echoes of mid-century, and I'm here for it. But, mate, I don't know. Bit skeptical, but it is very Los Angeles. So pros and cons, mate, pros and cons. Yeah,
that is, again, a lot of people in the comments saying it's never going to look this green. What is, you know, I can't see it looking this good. So lots of people questioning the price. Someone again saying that it might like the Capitol Records building. Little nod to the Capitol Records building, Luke. So, yeah, that's a theme. Yeah, I like it. I just can't believe the price of it. Like, unreal. Unreal. I guess $1 billion for one of these global entertainment businesses is pocket change.
Yeah, true. Maybe. I don't know. It's a lot of money.
Yeah. Anyway, guys, let us know what you think about the new Affirmation Tower in New York, the new and revised Affirmation Tower in New York, and the new star, the billion-dollar star building in Hollywood, California. Get your comments coming in, podcast@theb1m.com. Swinging over to the email inbox, what you got for us, Luke?
Right, we've got an email from Joe Donnelly from Indiana who says, "Hello, Fred and friends." So we only get friends, but that's fine. Not sorry about it.
You are not my friends.
Cheers, mate. He goes, "Started listening to the podcast on the episode where Liam was at a nude beach and the guys were gawking. Got me hooked right away. Love every podcast." Honestly, yeah, brilliant. I don't think it was. Was it a nude beach, per se?
I think we should move on right now.
Yeah. 100% it was a nude beach.
Okay.
Why were you there? Anyway, move on.
Right. He says, "I do have a question. I do have a question. Can you tell us how the B1M got its name, Fred? Listening from Gary, Indiana."
Oh, I couldn't tell you that.
What do you reckon?
I couldn't tell you that. We're going to keep that. I've explained that many times on previous podcasts and interviews, so I haven't got the energy to do it again right now.
Well, Joe's missed it, mate. Joe's obviously missed it.
Come on,
it's Joe. It's like BIM, but instead of an I, it's a 1.
Yeah, the idea when I first died, I was trying to get more awareness of building information modeling to the masses. So the B1M was the BIM 1 million. The idea was to try and get BIM out to 1 million people through YouTube. And that's basically how the story started. You know, I started putting some very, what I thought were good videos about building information modeling and how it works on YouTube in my spare time on the weekends after work. Traction picked up, channel started to grow, and basically what I'm saying is I got to the stage where I was able to hire Liam, and then when Liam joined everything
when I started took... I think we're on 98,000
this story,
and I believe now we're nearly at 3.2 million.
you know that just when you start a company and you stay there for 5 years, time passes and things change. Does not necessarily associate with you
like, advance. I don't know, you, mate.
Yeah
From when I've chatted to Liam, it does seem like those things are quite integral, you know.
We tried to change the name of the B1M, but then the person I was trying to, because basically one of the domain names was already taken, so I was trying to ask for a domain name, and the guy wants to charge me a load of money. It was a bit of a pain in the ass, basically. And then at the same time, the channel really took off, so I was like, we'll just stick with B1M now. But now I'm constantly haunted by this question. People like Joe emailing in, go, "What's B1M stand for?"
Yeah, just let him ask, mate. I remember I went to a PR agency in London and a guy said to me, oh, you guys will never get big brands to work with you. Never, ever, not with that name. And here we are. 5 years later, we work with all the biggest tech brands in architecture and construction.
Have that.
You know it,
mate.
There
you go.
I had a bloke say to me when I first started that this was never going to amount to much and I should go back and get a real job. So he's still sat at his desk job in the same office where he's worked for 20 years.
Oh.
Hello, if you're listening.
He might like us, you were wrong. You know,
what's his
he
name?
Might enjoy you were it. Wrong. I'm not going to name names here. Not going to name names.
You could do a little spoonerism and put the first letter of their last name at the
Cunning.
You
know. No one love crack that, Luke.
No, exactly. Won't be like allegedly this person. Anyway, yeah, that's it. Well, thanks, Joe. Appreciate the email, mate.
Thanks,
keep
Joe.
Him coming, guys.
Thanks for opening a big emotional wound in my heart. Guys, get your reviews coming in. If you're on Spotify, you need to click that review button. You need to get north of 400. Come on, let's go. Don't forget you can donate to our mental health initiative. We are trying to raise awareness and improve/tackle construction's mental health crisis. Go over to getconstructiontalking.org, make a donation over there, find resources and support over there as well. Please, 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 over the Easter weekend, don't just hunt for Easter eggs, but go and watch the Faroe Islands video. Share it with your mates. Get it up on the big TV. Tune in. Keep your comments coming in, guys. Keep your reviews coming in, and we'll see you next week.
Sweet.
Can you guys hear me?
Pardon? Yeah.
Can you guys hear me?
Pardon?
Mm-hmm.
We can hear you, Liam.